Program.
The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and today, complete kidney care with guest expert, nephrologist, or kidney expert, Dr. Charles Sanders of the LifeLength Healthcare Institute in Tampa, Florida. But first, this radio show and the Focus on Females annual symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, are supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based health safety net, making you a lay expert for your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families. And again, today, nephrology, complete kidney care with Dr. Charles Sanders. Dr. Sanders rejoined the LifeLink family after serving 2 years on the faculty at the University of Alabama in Birmingham. He received his nephrology training at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences and completed his transplant fellowship at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. Dr. Sanders is a transplant nephrologist with additional experience and qualifications in liver transplantation medicine. He's board certified in internal medicine and nephrology. Dr. Sanders has a particular interest in transplant immunosuppressive management, pharmacological research, and chronic allograft dysfunction. And all those things will be explained during the hour. He is a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of South Florida. Dr. Sanders is a member of numerous professional and scientific societies, including the American College of Physicians, the International Society of Nephrology, and the American Society of Nephrology, to mention a few. He's also the member of the National Kidney Foundation. Dr. Sanders has articles published in many journals, including Transplantation, American Journal of Kidney Disease, and the Journal of the Florida Medical Association. His abstracts have been presented to the American Society of Transplant Physicians, the American Society of Nephrology, and the Southeastern Oregon Procurement Foundation. And Charles, it's awfully nice to have you here today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And really, I'd like to welcome you, and as well as the LifeLink Healthcare Institute family. This is the first opportunity we've had to work with you all, and I look forward to doing so. Tell us about LifeLink. First off, LifeLink Healthcare Institute has an outstanding reputation here in Tampa. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, thank you. LifeLink has been in Tampa for about 25 years or so. It is a multifaceted organization. It includes clinical patient care activities with nephrologists, hepatologists, vascular surgeons, and cardiologists available for patient care. In addition, it includes an organ procurement organization and a tissue typing lab as well. When you say LifeLink, it can mean multiple things.
Okay. So now, are all the activities of LifeLink pertained, all the clinical activities pertain to transplantation of the various organs?
No, we, in fact, one of the things we like to promote about our nephrology group is the fact that we not only focus on transplants, but also all facets of chronic kidney disease. In addition, as I mentioned, we have cardiologists that deal with congestive heart failure and hepatologists that deal with various aspects of chronic liver disease.
So one does not need to be in need of an organ, a transplant organ, to be able to take advantage of the expertise at LifeLink?
Absolutely not. Any patient with chronic kidney disease, we would love to see and help participate in their management.
And there are clinics that patients are evaluated on the site of LifeLink itself?
Yes, at our office near Tampa General Hospital off the Bayshore Boulevard, we have clinic space dedicated to the care of those patients.
And what's the website of LifeLink where someone might look in and learn more about LifeLink's services?
Yeah, it's www.lifelinkfound.org, and there you can find a lot of useful information in terms of how to contact us and about the things that we do.
Okay, well, very good. All right, well, let's see. Let's begin today's hour discussing the kidney, and maybe very briefly, let's discuss what the kidney's function is and why it's an essential organ of the body.
Well, the kidney is the filter of the body. It's responsible for a number of different physiologic processes. Removing waste products is the one that we think about most commonly, but the kidney is also important in terms of anemia management and maintaining acid-base balance within the body as well as fluid balance.
Okay. As you mentioned, most people are aware that it removes impurities, waste, I guess liquid waste from the body. But anemia, now some people may not be aware that it produces, as I remember, erythropoietin.
Exactly. The kidney produces a hormone which then stimulates the bone marrow to make new red blood cells. And that's why patients with chronic kidney disease commonly develop anemia.
Okay. And as far as the so-called acid-base balance and electrolyte balance, why, for our listeners, why is that important? What is acid-base balance about? And let's begin there.
Yeah, well, acid-base balance can be about a lot of things. Good bone health, for example, has a lot to do with acid-base balance. Along with the lungs, it helps us to maintain a normal physiologic state so that our internal organs, the remainder of the organs, can function properly. The various electrolytes can affect anything from heart rhythms to muscle fatigue and muscle cramps. So it affects a wide variety of organs.
So basically every living cell, of which, of course, tissues and organs have millions of these cells, require a specific electrolyte balance, sodium, potassium, and as well as a specific pH or acid-base level to function adequately so that the organ itself functions well and retains a healthy individual.
Exactly, and the kidney plays an important role in maintaining all of those physiologic processes.
Okay, then let's go to the next step and ask, what are the major causes of kidney disease? So if a well-functioning kidney preserves these bodily functions, keeping the individual healthy, then when these fail, when the kidney fails, of course the patient ultimately has difficulty, as you mentioned before, they can get anemia, they can have difficulty with bodily functions. What are the major causes of kidney disease in this country?
Well, in our country, you need to look at two major causes, basically. That's diabetes and hypertension or high blood pressure. If you look at the causes of end-stage kidney disease in our country, 44% or so is from diabetes, and another 25 or 27% is from hypertension. So if you do the math, that's over 70% of chronic kidney disease in our country from just those two disorders.
And I'm looking at those two diagnoses, and I'm thinking a common thread is obesity there.
Well, you're exactly right. Our country has an obesity problem, and certainly being over your ideal body weight is going to predispose you to develop diabetes and hypertension.
All right. And on the line is Mike. Mike, I understand you're a patient with LifeLink. Are you there? Can you hear me? Mike, are you on the line? All right. All right, we'll go back and check with Mike in the meantime. So hypertension, diabetes together, almost 70% of the cause of kidney disease in this country. And what are the would you say this is chronic kidney disease, that 70% we're talking about here?
Right. Yeah, I would say chronic and end-stage kidney disease, and the vast majority are related to patients with either diabetes or high blood pressure.
Okay. And let's take a moment and discuss how diabetes and high blood pressure damages the kidney.
Yeah, well, diabetes, poorly controlled diabetes can damage the filtration membrane of the kidney, resulting in the spillage of significant amounts of protein in the urine, and in the process of trying to reclaim that protein, the kidney actually damages itself. And with high blood pressure, you have this high pressure head feeding into the kidney, and actually, the kidney is not designed like many other organs, the brain or the heart, to sustain pressures that high, and it causes subsequent scarring and fibrosis and damage.
Now, recently, I've read that the recommended diastolic pressure, now, even we even discussed on an earlier focus on females, was 90. 90 millimeters of mercury was felt to be the cutoff between healthy and unhealthy diastolic pressures, but that's come down a bit. Would you say that, and now I understand more like 85 is a healthy diastolic pressure insofar as from a cardiologist perspective, would you concur from a nephrologist perspective that if really you really want to protect the kidney insofar as blood pressures, that a diastolic pressure needs to be closer to 85?
Absolutely. If you've got target organ damage from your high blood pressure, so if you've got heart disease or you've got underlying kidney disease, the target blood pressure that you need to achieve is going to be lower. And we now try to target blood pressures less than 130 over 80 in our population, which is difficult to do.
Okay. I understand Mike is back with us. Mike, are you on the line with the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic?
Hello.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Good, and thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We have Dr. Sanders here.
Yeah, Dr. Sanders, how are you?
Doing well, Mike.
It's been a couple of years since I've seen you.
Thanks for calling in.
Pretty
Mike,
good.
Tell us about your case, Mike. What kind of medical problem had you had?
Well, actually, I had no medical history prior to my hypertension, and the fact it was undiagnosed for, I would imagine, at least a couple of years. But the thing that brought it to the forefront was while I was in a training class at work. I was an undercover detective with St. Petersburg Police Department. I had a pretty intense seizure, and my blood pressure was just off the chart. It was actually in stroke level.
Wow. Okay. And how old were you at the time?
Well, let's see. I was about 31 years old.
All right.
Which was, difficult for me to fathom. I went through the police academy at age 28, was probably in the best shape of my life, and all of a sudden, my blood pressure is just off the chart.
Okay. And how long ago did the seizure occur?
Oh, let's see. This would have been 1994, just before Thanksgiving.
All right. So it's about roughly 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And you said you were 31 at that time?
I was 31.
Okay.
And in fact, I was going to the training class. I was getting ready to go out and do an undercover buy.
Right.
And I woke up at Ed White Hospital.
Wow.
I had to really worry about the pressures that were in my brain. I had mannitol to reduce the pressure there, and they told me after a couple of days, hey, look, you know, you're neurologically perfect. You know, God is smiling on you, so go and try to have a good life.
Well, looking back on that, and it may be too far down the road now to do so, but reflecting back, do you recall up until that time, leading up to that seizure, any kind of symptoms or that you have identified that you kind of ignored that went away?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And I didn't realize it at the time. I had this, I had a headache that mm-hmm. wouldn't go away for probably about maybe 6 months, 6 to 8 months. And I just thought everybody had headaches.
Okay.
Not really recognizing any of my health risks as an African American, or that, you know, I had a very strong history of heart disease in my family.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of ignored that. And that week, just before the seizure, I had probably the worst headache of my life. Completely disoriented. I was driving downtown, kept hitting all the one-way streets, and I really needed to be in East Tampa, but I was in downtown.
Okay.
Couldn't find my way home.
And did you share this with anyone in your family?
Well, you know, I knew that that wasn't really normal, but I didn't say anything. I don't know
okay.
if it's, it was just the foolishness of a male ego. I just thought I could handle it.
Okay. Had you had any visual symptoms as well leading up to this seizure?
Yes, actually I had quite a few visual that I didn't realize were connected to this, but, you know, I had diminished visual acuity. Had a halo effect around everything, whether it was the daytime or the nighttime.
Okay. All right, we're going to be right back in a flash with more with Mike, Dr. Sanders, on nephrology, complete kidney care, when we come right back.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Guten Tag! Enjoy the sights and sounds of Germany at the Schnitzelhaus while feasting on our award-winning cuisine. The Schnitzelhaus is open Wednesday through Saturday from 11 to 9, Sundays from 12 to 8. Lunch prices range from 6 to 10, dinner from 10 to $20. Please call us at 813-884-5634 to make dinner reservations or find our website at schnitzelhaustampa.com. Please visit soon at the Schnitzelhaus, 4333 West Waters Avenue, phone 813-884-5634, where the food is as authentic as the chef's accent.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Once again, our lines to call in Hillsboro County, 289-1860, anywhere else, toll free, 877-969-8600. And once again, we're tackling complete kidney care with Dr. Charles Sanders, LifeLink Healthcare Institute, and on the line is Mike. Mike, are you still there with us?
Yes.
Okay. So we were discussing your case and how about approximately 15 years ago, as a 31-year-old healthy man, as far as you know, you had no other previous medical problems, correct?
That's right.
You suddenly had this seizure, terrible seizure, and you woke up one day at Edward White Hospital.
That's right.
And now as we reflect back, you can identify symptoms that had occurred during at least the week previously. Would you say it even dated back prior, more than a week before this event?
The headaches that just would not go away were absolutely a primary indicator, and I just wasn't aware of it at the time.
Okay.
And having no real medical history, I never had any problems. If I didn't feel so well one day, I'd feel better the next.
So, that's right. And as you said, do you have any medical personnel in your family?
Well, yes. Actually, I do. My uncle's a medical technologist, and he's very familiar with a lot of the symptoms, but, we never really talked about that.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so you had, and you mentioned you had a family history of heart disease.
Yes.
You had the headache, and you had halos around your vision and decreased vision.
Yes.
But, as you said before, you didn't really know how to process this. You kind of did you feel this was just going to eventually go away?
Well, I thought it might eventually go away, but, it became just a little more, incessant. And absolutely that week before, the significant incident, I guess I started to get a little worried about it. Mm-hmm. I was thinking maybe I should go to the doctor.
Well, as a lesson here for everybody out there listening, share your symptoms. If things begin, speaking from a physician's perspective, if things start that are not typical for you, share it with a loved one, friend, neighbor, family. Just share it, maybe even coworkers. Share and to identify whether or not to get a sounding board, to get some advice as far as whether or not you should go ahead and get a professional opinion.
Absolutely. I just thought it was normal that people would have a headache, and it's really not so normal.
Right. And then beyond that, of course, the importance of education, and this is something that we at Focus on Females feel very strongly about, getting out into the community and educating, and even educating at a younger age, even in high school or even earlier. That's something that we're working on as well. Okay, so you had the episode, the seizure. You woke up at Ed White Hospital, and they told you that your blood pressure was through the roof.
Yeah, I think they said it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 210 over 119.
Okay.
And I did have some bleeding on the brain at that point.
All right.
And about 15% kidney function.
15% of overall kidney function.
Yeah, 50, and it just decreased from there.
Let me ask Dr. Sanders here. Charles, how much kidney function? I know everyone knows one kidney is sufficient to live on. What percent of a single kidney is necessary to live?
Well, you can survive, as Mike alluded to, with even as little as 15% of normal kidney function, but we begin to develop symptoms very late in the onset of kidney disease, as Mike did. And when you get to be below 15%, and particularly around 10%, you often start to see these kind of troubling symptoms, and that's when we have to consider intervening with dialysis.
Okay, well, this is interesting then. So the question becomes, if I'm ignoring symptoms suggesting I have high blood pressure, what does the kidney do? When the kidney's function is reduced to 15% or 20%, 25%, do I start to see swelling around my ankles? Are there other signs that listeners can look for, to, again, identify potential problem with their kidneys?
Right. Well, you can certainly start to see fluid retention. You can start to see a loss of appetite or a funny taste. Food just doesn't seem to taste right. Weight loss, shortness of breath. Those sorts of symptoms tell you something is really, really wrong, and that things are at a fairly advanced stage.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That you acknowledge. It sounds like you've remember some of those symptoms.
Oh, yeah, very clearly. Yeah, haven't forgotten any of that.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. Be right back and talk more with Mike and the LifeLink Healthcare Institute with Dr. Charles Sanders about complete kidney care. Be right back.
Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Radio, 860 WGUL.
With SRN News, I am Michael Harrington in Washington. President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's election rival says he should have won the Iranian elections and is urging his backers to continue civil and lawful opposition. However, the protests continue in Tehran. However, Ahmadinejad says, as far as he was concerned, the elections are fair and he's moving on. A top government official says Pakistan has decided to pursue an army operation against the country's Taliban chief. The governor of the Northwest Frontier province says the army will go after the Pakistan Taliban commander, saying troops are already in action. An 18-year-old South Florida man in custody with 19 counts of animal cruelty. Authorities accused Tyler Weinman of committing a string of gruesome cat mutilation deaths, horrifying his Miami area community. And the Senate's top Republican says lawmakers should focus on making the existing health care system work better before overhauling the American system as it is. This is SRN News.
So let's get this straight. Chrysler gets a bailout from America.
Very important for the economy of the U.S.
Then, so that we can protect the American auto industry, we sell Chrysler to Fiat in Italy.
I'm going to make them an offer again with you.
So, how do you say minivan in Italian? And what will a Jeep Cherokee look like when the Obama administration gets through with it?
Electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles.
Now more than ever, we're carpooling together. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Kim Commando here. Countdown until vacation. Woo! Better post that on Facebook for all my friends. Better tweet it on Twitter, too. But what about all your klepto friends that also follow you? Armed with this information that you're posting online, along with the photos, they have just what they need to steal you blind. This weekend, how thieves can even see pictures of the inside of your home on the internet.
Kim Commando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL. Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back. We are talking with Mike about his situation regarding kidney damage, actually, which was brought to a head, I guess, 15 years ago when he was admitted for seizures relative to elevated high blood pressure. All right. So after the blood pressure was brought under control and you were managed over there in the hospital, Ed White Hospital. And they told you had only 15% of your kidney function.
Mm-hmm.
What then?
Well, at that point, had a really modified diet, just about zero fluid intake. I think I was down to about maybe 800, 900 milliliters a day.
Right.
Not much at all. And I had to find different ways to quench my thirst. So a lot of different techniques they taught me. And
for example.
Well, I was told a good thing to do is just if I order a drink, just get a lot of ice with it because the volume of fluid is going to be the same, and then I could at least enjoy the ice, still feel like I'm getting my thirst quenched.
Right.
Another technique was to take grapes and freeze them, put them in the freezer, and then enjoy the grapes because they would melt a little bit and it would be very quenching.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great technique, in fact.
Okay.
But basically, I'd have to just be very cautious about it and kind of save up the fluid during the day and really try to enjoy it while I had it.
How about suckers or chewing gum? Is that also
not so much the chewing gum? I didn't really chew gum that much, but I would use jawbreakers or things like that would just allow me to kind of let that dissolve in my mouth, and it would assist.
Mm-hmm.
It just reduced my salt intake, and that kind of helped. Curb my, my thirst.
Thirst, right.
Yeah.
And at some point you must have had a discussion about what this means.
Oh, yes, because it just began to diminish. Finally, my kidney function had gone below 50. I think it was about 10%, maybe a little bit less.
Mm.
and we had to go into options for dialysis.
Okay. At this point, at what point did you meet Dr. Sanders?
It would have been once I did an evaluation with LifeLink.
Okay.
So I was with a nephrologist who recommended the CAPD.
CAPD. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Charles, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, that CAPD stands for chronic ambulatory peritoneal dialysis. So that's a form of dialysis the patient can do at home using a catheter inserted into the abdominal cavity in a special dialysis solution.
Okay. And so your nephrologist had talked to you about that first and then sent you to LifeLink. How did that come about?
Well, we actually did the had to do
dialysis.
An emergency dialysis, really.
Okay.
I actually kind of forgot about that. That's how I ended up getting into dialysis in the first place. Is my creatinine levels were probably around 5 or 6.
Creatinine being a marker of kidney function?
Correct. Creatinine is a substance that's basically excreted from the body only by the kidneys, so we use it as an indirect marker of kidney function.
Okay. And a normal being under 1.5 on average?
Yes, 1.5 or less.
And so, Mike, you're at a multiple of that.
I was at about 5 or 6 on a regular basis, which was manageable. But blood work came back, and it was at around just shy of 16, which is...
Your creatinine?
My creatinine was...
Had gone up to 16?
Yeah, just shy. So that was time for emergency dialysis, so I had to go to the emergency room that day.
Okay.
So over the course of 2 days on the emergency dialysis, they took off about 40 pounds of fluid.
All right. And this is typically emergency dialysis, Charles, typically also a peritoneal dialysis?
Typically, for emergent purposes, you would start with the hemodialysis through a temporary catheter and then ultimately make the conversion to the home form of peritoneal dialysis.
Okay.
And that's exactly what we did.
All right, so you went ahead with the CAPD, the peritoneal dialysis at home, and how frequently did you have to do that?
Well, that's every day.
Okay.
And at first I was doing the manual exchanges. So you have to do that about 3 or 4 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Finally we got the cycler, which is a machine that will do it for you while you sleep.
Okay.
So I would just connect to the cycler about 9 o'clock at night, and I'd be able to come off about 10 hours later. And it would do the exchanges for me as I slept.
Okay, during the day you didn't have to do any of this?
Right. I would maintain 2 liters, think of a 2-liter Coke bottle. I'd maintain a solution of, I think it's like dextrose solution in the abdominal cavity. And it's just kind of working like osmosis.
Right.
I would just go about my business during the day. I could go to work. I was working full-time doing all of this. And at night, I would plug up. But, you know, it's trying, and you get a little frustrated, and I got frustrated a little bit. But ultimately, during the process, you know, I was evaluated for kidney transplantation, and I was suitable, so we're just waiting for a candidate.
All right, so during the interim time, over the last 15 years, you've been continuing the peritoneal dialysis?
Oh, about not quite 2 years. I'd say 18 months after I began, I was transplanted.
Okay, all right.
So I've had a functioning transplanted kidney for about 12 years now.
Okay, yeah. Good. So let's talk about a little bit about that. So a couple of years after you began the dialysis, it was determined that it was you were time to consider a transplant. And I guess, Charles, would you speak to the issue of at what point a patient who's on chronic dialysis should consider transplantation?
Well, our hope actually is to even preemptively transplant patients if we can before the need for dialysis arises. So I would begin planning for both dialysis and transplant when your clearance reaches about 20% of normal.
And for the listeners out there, explain why that's the best philosophy at this point.
Well, I think outcomes in general are better with a preemptive transplant. If you can make the jump from chronic kidney disease to a successful kidney transplant without ever having had the need for dialysis, you have every expectation of a better outcome.
And, of course, the impact on an individual's life, the need for the dialysis and the impact on their functioning, it sounds like it's a greater impact than, for example, a freshly transplanted kidney that's working well. Would you, Mike? Would you speak to that? How when with a transplanted kidney functioning well, how, what that the impact on you personally was when you were able to stop using the dialysis?
Imagine a dirty window. Going to sleep, and all the windows in your house are dirty, and waking up in the morning, and they have been cleaned inside and out, and they're crystal clear. That was the difference from going under anesthesia and waking up in the recovery room. It just, my sensory inputs were much clearer, much sharper, from sounds to just visual acuity, even my mental processes.
All right, so you're saying that and Charles, this is probably what you were referring to with outcomes, your functioning of your bodily functioning was at a higher level with a transplanted kidney than you were able to obtain with under dialysis.
Without a doubt. And it was just, I felt better. I didn't even realize that I didn't feel that well. I didn't even know how badly I was feeling until I had the transplanted kidney and it was up and running. I'd say it was probably about 2 weeks before it was really kind of kicking in, because they called it a sleepy kidney.
Okay.
I'd actually gotten it from a donor in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
It was a cadaveric transplant as opposed to a living related donor or something like
right.
that. And it's just, I was just about at the edge of the window for viability for the transplant.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a little while for it to wake up, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But it once began working, it's been going strong for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get that kidney functioning, it's amazing how much better you feel.
This is so important, because and it's hard for the patient to understand when they think they're getting by and things are okay, when the expert, their physician, are saying that in this particular case, that actually if we were to transplant a kidney, your functioning would be superior to what you have now, despite all the other burdens that are upon the individual with chronic dialysis.
Quality of life is, you know, it's one thing to be alive, but it's another thing to have a quality of life. And I have such an improved quality of life. I've finished my degree. I'm beginning a doctoral program. I've traveled out around the world. I have learned how to ride a motorcycle. I know that may not make you so happy, Dr. Sanders, but I'm very safe. Okay. And I do like it.
Wear your helmet, Mike.
I wear my helmet. We'll not ride without it. And we take all the safety precautions, but it's not a daily driver, just something we do when the traffic is light. We're very, very careful. But there's just so much more that I've been able to do in life. It's like
been
a getting
life-changer.
A second life.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And also you're a lot smarter for it, and you know the signs and symptoms to look for in the future. And for that matter, you can help other people as you're helping today, joining us on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, and enlightening others who may be really in the stages you were before your seizure.
Oh, I really hope so. I mean, obviously this ended my career as a law enforcement officer. I wasn't able to go back out into the field, but I did some other things in law enforcement before I did retire. But now my second career, I teach, and I teach law and criminal justice at one of the local high schools.
Congratulations.
And it's given me an opportunity to educate another generation, particularly about these issues that seem to affect minorities at a higher rate. So it's okay that I'm not in law enforcement. I didn't really get to accomplish all the goals, because now I have, I think, a higher purpose, and God's given me an opportunity to do this.
That's right. That's right. Well, outstanding, Mike. And any last comments you'd like to share, or Charles, you'd like to share with Mike or our listeners on Mike's case?
Well, I think Mike's case is a good illustration of the benefits of transplantation in terms of the optimal therapy for chronic kidney disease. And I think he expressed very well that the what studies have shown over and over again, and that is the quality of life. There's simply no comparison. Dialysis is necessary, and it's needed, and I'm glad we have it, but it doesn't come anywhere close to a functioning kidney. So, Mike, I think you expressed that very well, and I thank you for calling in and sharing that with us today.
Well, thank you, and just as a final comment, not final at all, because I do try to work with LifeLink quite a bit. Dr. Sanders and the entire LifeLink team have been nothing but excellent to me and have provided me with the top quality care. And I tell you what, there's nothing greater than the gift of life. So anyone who is even toying with the idea of being a donor, just do it, because you will change lives as my life has been changed and as my family has been benefited. And in all things, I think it's just made me a better man, and I try to be everything that I can to be worthy of this gift that's been given to me.
Thank you again, Mike. So well stated, and we appreciate your time and your participation with Focus on Females.
Well, thank you, Doctor. I appreciate the invitation.
You bet. Have a good day.
Okay, Dr. Sanders, have a great day.
You too, Mike.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye now.
So long. One last quickie, thinking about transplant rejection, which is, of course, an area of your expertise. What should listeners think about as far as medications required to prevent transplant rejection? Obviously, Mike has gotten over 10 years out of his kidney without any significant transplant rejection issues. How would you like to share with listeners about that?
Well, I'd like to emphasize that with a kidney transplant comes an obligation for lifelong anti-rejection medication, and that there is every expectation of a successful outcome with the medications that we have today. They're quite specific, and rejection rates have now been reduced to 10-15%, and just because one has an episode of acute rejection doesn't mean you're going to lose your kidney. In fact, the vast majority of people don't. Over 95% one-year graft survival now. So, outstanding.
And is that cyclosporine still being used, or is it?
Cyclosporine is one of the drugs that we still rely on. There's a drug called tacrolimus. Mycophenolic acid. We rely on steroids less now mm-hmm. than we used to, which has been a good thing for patients mm-hmm. because of the side effect profile. But there are a whole host of anti-rejection medications now that we use in combination, which have provided quite successful outcomes.
And in combination, so you're able to use minimal of each of those to reduce any potential side effects.
Exactly. That's part of the strategy, is to use lower doses of combinations of medications so as to avoid some of those undesirable side effects.
And patients that have received transplantation that are being treated with anti-rejection medication, these patients are periodically evaluated to be sure to identify any early rejection episode.
Yes, the most important part of the evaluation is oftentimes the blood test to check that creatinine number that we alluded to earlier in our discussion.
Is that usually the first sign that there may be an early rejection?
Yes, we start to see a subtle or sometimes more brisk rise in the creatinine.
Excellent. All right, we'll be back in a flash to talk about a little bit about kidney stones with Dr. Sanders from LifeLink Healthcare Institute. We'll be right back on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling kidney care today with Dr. Charles Sanders of LifeLink Healthcare Institute. And on the line is Martin from Tampa. Welcome, Martin, to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Do you have a question on kidney disease?
Dr. Maskin. I am a patient of 82 years of age. And this question has to do with Staghorn's in the kidney.
Okay.
Staghorn's stone. Now, over, about 8-9 years, the growth of the Staghorn has gone from a 2.0 to a 2.4. My question is, at what point should I be concerned of this growth or not be concerned at all?
The Staghorn is in one kidney?
In the left kidney.
And as far as you know, the creatinine, the numbers reflecting the kidney function, is normal?
Everything is normal other than that Staghorn, yes.
And do you have any symptoms of kidney stones, any pain and so forth from kidney stones?
No, I don't have any pain at all, but I do have some cysts in the that kidney as well as the other kidney.
Okay, but otherwise you're healthy.
Yes.
No fluid retention, no other issues.
No, not at all.
Charlie, what do you think?
One of the issues with Staghorn stones always is chronic infection. So I think there are a couple of bacterial infections that come to mind, something called Proteus and something called Klebsiella, which can alter the pH of the urine and make it very alkaline and lead to the formation of Staghorn stones. So I would certainly want to know if there was any evidence of infection with either of these organisms in the urine.
Was your urine cultured, sir?
Yes. I recently had a culture, and everything seems to be normal.
Yeah.
And I haven't had any problems, but I'm a little concerned with the Staghorn, growth of the Staghorn.
Right, right. The natural history is that it's going to continue to enlarge over time, and ultimately you're going to require some sort of intervention. And I think follow-up right now is the key. You've got normal kidney function, no symptoms, no evidence of infection, but a problem that's likely to get worse in the future.
Charlie, the growth of the Staghorn, well, the Staghorn will grow until its natural maximum size, I imagine, by the renal capsule, capsule of the kidney. It won't continue to grow the kidney beyond its capsule.
No, but a Staghorn can enlarge and fill the entire drainage system of the kidney.
What happens then?
Well, your kidney function is typically impaired, and at that stage, you're usually using your contralateral or kidney on the other side as your filter.
For an 82-year-old gentleman, what are the key considerations here? The other kidney essentially is fairly normal creatinine. Let's say the Staghorn completely filled the collecting duct system of that one bad kidney. What, you know, should he consider intervention, or should he just monitor at his age?
No, I think I would consider intervention if it's going to compromise the function of one of your kidneys. and it's a preventable process or a treatable process, there are several urologic sorts of interventions that can be pursued, and even at age 82 that could fragment and remove the staghorn stone.
So staghorns can be fragmented even with that larger size.
Yeah. They would have to be removed, you know, through the surface. That's not the type of stone that you're going to think about passing. Right. But you can do something like a percutaneous, what they call nephrolithotomy,
right,
where they go through the skin surface and into the drainage system of the kidney and break it up and physically remove the fragments.
What is that called again?
Percutaneous nephrostolithotomy is the formal term.
Well, I'm sorry. How would you spell that?
All right. What we're going to do, Martin, is we'll hold you over. If this goes beyond the
okay,
2 o'clock,
okay,
we'll hold you over and we'll talk about or give you that information.
Okay. Any other procedures other than what was just mentioned?
No, or I think that would be the main procedure for a staghorn stone.
Okay.
You know, it'll be too big to break up with lithotripsy. The fragments wouldn't pass.
Okay.
So going from 2 centimeters?
2.0 to 2.4.
In about 9 years?
8-9 years, correct.
Okay. Would you recommend, if you say asymptomatic now, should he wait until it gets larger and becomes maybe more symptomatic, or should he go ahead and consider something?
Yeah, I think at age 82, I would recommend regular urologic follow-up at this point and periodic surveillance for evidence of infection in the urine.
Okay, and you're being followed by a urologist?
Yes, yes.
All right, so from your perspective, Charlie, you think that when this staghorn begins to cause symptoms is the time to go in and...
Right.
Because it may not be for another 5-10 more years.
Exactly.
Okay. There's no symptoms of infection, nothing at all. As I mentioned a few moments ago, I did have a culture, and the culture seemed to be fine. There's no problem.
Were you, by any chance, worked up by or evaluated by an endocrinologist or to look at potential hormones?
Well, I have a parathyroid that's at a high level, but everything else being normal, so we're a little concerned, but watching that as well. I don't know if that enters into this concern that I have.
Well, hyperparathyroidism can be a predisposing risk factor to stones. Typically, those would be our calcium phosphate stones, as opposed to what you're referring to as struvite stones, which are kind of a collection of magnesium and ammonium and phosphate.
And that's the one usually with the staghorns is the struvite.
Struvite or staghorn stones, yes.
All right.
I shouldn't be concerned about that as far as the staghorn.
No, I don't think the primary hyperparathyroidism is
related to that.
Related to that.
Okay. All right. I thank you, and I appreciate the information. And as I alluded to at one point, you have a very good program, and I will listen to it all every Sunday. But thanks again.
Well, thank you very much, and feel free to call back in the future. And what I will do is... Mic, the producer, will get your phone number, and so we can share that the name of that procedure with you off air.
Very good. Thanks a lot.
Okay. During our last minute, I'd like to reach out and thank my good friend Charles Sanders and the LifeLink Healthcare Institute for joining us today. Next week on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is endometriosis with guest expert Dr. Madeline Butler. This is Dr. Steve Maskin signing off, wishing each and every one of you a great week. See you next week.